This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred. And the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
What is about? There's something.
Hello, Joysters. You are on Joy 94.9. This is Jim, and I'm in the studio with Kurt and Steph and Patrick. And Kurt and Steph haven't been for a while, I don't think. So
well, Steph has. Steph's been working
hard. I've been around, working hard.
Last time she was, that's right. But before that, she was away a bit. And Kurt's been skiving off.
Skiving off. Is that what you call it?
Skiving off for a while, but he's back looking like...
Yeah.
Dapper.
Yeah. Looking dapper.
I'm chirpy. Yeah, dapper.
I think it's more Kurt had a sabbatical. And he is now refreshed and sounding far fresher than I will.
And Patrick's looking his usual dapper self.
Oh, bless you.
Pink and red hair, as usual.
Oh, yes, yes. I need a good bit of pink.
And it looks like you've had
tonight
a haircut.
We've got a good show for you. We've got some interesting guests. We've got trans woman Sally Goldner extraordinaire coming on to talk to us about issues trans, because we... We have a bit of a tradition on this show to talk issues trans when we can, and we've got Professor Rob Moody from the Global Health Institute at the University of Melbourne to talk to us as part of a discussion we're going to have around alcohol fueled violence and what are some of the solutions that we might talk about with regard to that. So it's going to be an interesting show. So is everybody geared up, ready for that?
Pumped. So pumped. I have so many opinions on alcohol-fueled violence. I'm very excited.
I'm really keen to talk about this one, especially relating to Barry O'Farrell and the recent laws in Barry O'Farrell, the Premier of New South Wales, just to clarify, and the lockout laws that he's presented in the entertainment precincts of Sydney CBD.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
And we've got on the line now, we hope, Sally Goldner. Are you there, Sally?
I am indeed. Evening, Joysters.
Excellent.
How are you, Sally?
Okay.
Well, one of the reasons we invited you on was because I saw you over at Daniel Whithouse's Makeout TED Talks the other night, and I thought it was fantastic. I thought you gave a really good talk. And,
Thank you.
And it was quite interesting because the week before had been the kerfuffle on American TV about Laverne Cox and her statements around being asked on the Katie Couric show about her surgery and how she didn't like the fact that she was being asked about surgery straight away because it reduced a trans person's life
experience
to just the physical body, and that wasn't the only life that she said that she had. And one of the things I noticed in your talk was that you actually voluntarily talked about surgery quite upfront and openly and near the beginning of your talk. And I just wondered what it seemed to me that we've had quite a lot of talk on this show about the trans experience and under the prompting, of course, of young Kurt.
Yeah,
Kurt,
I do like to.
Here.
Hi, Sally. It's
hey,
nice
Kurt.
To have you on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was excited about this topic, and I think it's such a broad topic and so much to talk about. But Jim's pointed out this one thing of, is it offensive for a trans person to be asked about their surgery? And if it's not for that particular person, what's the right timing to insert that question, especially with a famous trans person or even just a friend?
I'd actually say probably it's rarely a time to ask at all, because to ask really doesn't change that, is not relevant to that person's sense of identity, male, female, or other than binary. But if someone wants to talk about it, then that is, of course, their call. And I felt in the context of what this talk was supposed to be, to reach out to trans people in regional and rural areas where there may still be some degree of, perhaps not so much a lack of, but a shortage of understanding of the whole gender kaleidoscope, that I would talk about the various parts of my trans journey, living for 2.5 years without making a permanent transition, then making a permanent transition, and then realising that surgery was not for me. So it could get the point across that you can just be your, in terms of gender identity, you can be whichever dot on the gender kaleidoscope you need to be. And I felt that was important in this context.
And I thought that the way that you handled it was fantastically... It was almost in a way self-deprecating, because you didn't make it a big thing, but you did actually make it very personal. And I thought that it would, if people had been listening to that properly, and I hope I was, it would give people a much better understanding of the different ways in which a trans person could view themselves, and in fact have their own self-awareness, and that self-awareness is an important part of the awareness that other people should have of the person. And, you know, yep. It's not about, does this person have a vagina or not?
Can I ask a question? Sorry, you mentioned talking to people in particularly rural areas. Have you heard stories of people living in those areas about support or lack of? What do you, you know, something to kind of give us an idea about the rural experience of someone who grew up in St Kilda and now lives in Brunswick? I'm not...
Oh, look, she's a hipster. I saw it in the paper today.
Yeah, I guess have a sense of what's happening beyond Melbourne CBD.
Yeah, look, after Daniel came back from the Beyond That, Daniel Whithouse came back from the Beyond That So Gay tour, I remember him saying that apart from a couple of areas of regional Victoria, there was not a lot of awareness of trans outside the 8 major cities. For that matter, there was probably even less awareness overall on bisexuality, which we could talk about as well. But I think in a couple of years, I've seen, you know, Shepparton come on in leaps and bounds, thanks to good work of lots of people up there. I went down to Warrnambool, I think it's about 18 months ago now, to give a couple of talks, and there seems to be some awareness there. So if people can sort of imagine a map of Victoria at least and draw a line sort of from southwest to northeast, running from Warrnambool sort of up through Bendigo, Ballarat, Shepparton, and then up to Albury, Wodonga, I feel like at least in Victoria there is some growth there, but increase in trans awareness there. But I don't know, I'd be honest and say I don't know enough about what's happening in, say, the other states to be aware of that. But I think overall it's still a long way to go, and so it's possibly logical to say that people might still be in a more binary frame of reference in regional and rural areas. So I think it was important, yeah, to talk about the fact that you can be yourself.
I think most people still think, even in the city, Sally, my experience is that most people still think very much in the binary about gender. And that's mainly because most people are brought up in the binary about gender, and it's very hard for people to actually step outside that binary if they're not either confronted or they meet and get to know someone and like them as a friend. And once people do that, then I think they begin to... It begins to seep into their consciousness that there is more than the one.
Yeah, I think...
So this is a topic we could talk about for hours and hours and hours, and we unfortunately don't have time to do a whole show on it.
Well, true. And I think just quickly, I think it's the old story, perhaps people don't know what they don't know, but when they do and have a chance to think about it, it's all, oh, okay. And then they've thought about it. And, on many a setting, that seems to be the case, that people start thinking beyond the two-dot points and, you know, then get to a line and then to a kaleidoscope.
Yeah. We'll be bringing you back after we've gone to some messages, Sally. So stay on the line and we'll have even more to discuss. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Is Nothing Sacred? With Pat, James, Kurt and Steph. Joy 94.9.
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim, and I'm here with Kurt, Pat, and Steph. And we've got Sally Goldner as our guest on the line.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello again.
And we've been talking about issues trans and gender, two different things. We're not necessarily talking about transgender, but we are talking about things trans and gender. And we got onto the issue of the binary notion of gender and the fact that most people think in terms of the binary of either male or female as their gender, because that's what they're born and brought up. How hard was it, Sally, for you to actually take yourself out of that binary?
Ooh, there's another one that could go on for an hour. But, I mean, let's look at this. I mean, on someone born in the mid-60s, 1965, where...
Oh, you're a youngster, really.
I call myself now an over 25. But,
don't be old.
No, unless you're 25 or younger. But the thing is that obviously having, in my first awareness of I'll face something, which obviously I didn't know what it was, which was for so many people part of the issue, kicked in, which was, say, by about 6 or 9, early 70s. I mean, no one had really heard of transgender, transsexual then, and I suppose I mentioned in the talk, the niche talk, that you mentioned, that I made the comparison that up in Brighton, near to St Kilda, was like sort of growing up in a very conservative rural area. It was just that there were more buildings or something, and no one had really heard of this sort of thing. So I was thinking I had to be male and had to be masculine as well and have a male identity. There was just no piece of jigsaw that could connect. And so I went on in simple terms like this for about, just short of 30 years until finally, I couldn't push it down anymore. I think that's a pretty similar story for trans people of probably of any age, but also it's parallel to, say, the issues faced by gay, lesbian, bisexual. And then finally got some right information that just explained transgender very, very simply and clearly.
And was that a light bulb moment?
Oh, a humongous light bulb.
Sally,
100 watt environmentally friendly.
And Kurt, what about you? Did you have that light bulb moment too?
I did have a light bulb moment, yeah. There was always something down deep inside, and once I got the information, it was just amazing, and I just was ready, rang up the doctor and made my appointment, spoke about it with my doctor, and it's very exciting news when you find that information.
Look at this young man now.
Sally, where did you eventually find information? Because there wouldn't have been things like the internet, and were there youth centres or things like that?
Kurt's a thoroughly modern young trans man.
Thoroughly modern, yeah.
Well, look, you've hit pretty fair points there. So my moment of turnaround was 1995, just into halfway between 29 and 30 years old physically. And I had sort of confided in one friend who could see things were not right, that I was under some degree of stress trying to, find out or work things out. And yes, there wasn't a lot of internet, of course, at that point. And to keep things short, after one false start with a psychiatrist who, frankly, had no idea about these issues, as sadly too many health professionals still don't, by luck, total luck, one night we'd heard of, there was something, and this is how it was at the time, there's something about Monash. So we rang the whole switchboard for Monash Health, as it was then, and got put through to a duty psychologist who said, I've got this friend who's just completed her psychology master's in sexuality and gender, and gave me the number, and I went to see her. And it was really dumb luck at that point that I managed to ring the right person where that duty psychologist was on, who put me on to the psychologist who just explained it and said, you may have been, and this was pretty much her words at the time, born male, but some people are more feminine than masculine and some might need to identify as female, and that's called transgender. And it was just, very illuminating.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. So it really was luck.
And boy, have you come on in leaps and bounds since then.
Sorry?
I mean, you've come on in leaps and bounds since then, haven't you? You've even had a documentary made about you.
Well, that's right. Sally's Story, which people can have a look at on Screen Zone or get in touch with me for copies here and just the community announcement. But, I've come a long way, for sure. I mean, that really was a turning point. I feel that's when I really, although I'd been living physically 30 years, that's when my soul began to wake up a bit and get moving. But it hasn't been a straight upward line, of course. There's been, you know, left, right, diagonal and ups and downs. But, yeah, 18 and, no, where are we coming up for 19 years on after that? Yeah, I do. I look back at the person I was living as then, and I'm not just, of course, in the physical or the appearance sense, and now I just feel like a totally different person who's just far more connected to who I truly am in a lot of ways, and not just to do with gender and gender identity.
Yeah, I agree, Sally. I sometimes look at old photos of myself and just see myself as a different person, and it's kind of mind-blowing to be able to see my old self as other people would have seen me, and it was completely different to what I was seeing on the inside. But it's a real it's an awakening moment to be able to do that, and it sort of makes you realize how far you've come, where a lot of people, transgender or not, don't really look at how far they've come and, you know, how resilient they've been in stressful situations.
I think this is a topic that we are going to have to revisit and revisit reasonably soon. So we will we'll wrap up this part of the thing. And thank you very much for coming on now, Sally. And if people want to give us any comment about this discussion or get in contact with us, please SMS us on 0427JOY949 or email us on onair@joy.org.au. Or you can ring Robert on the front desk on 1300JOY949, because Robert's being our support person tonight.
It's been such a good egg. I ended up arriving late and he went, "Where have you been?" He was such a sweetheart for that one.
Apparently everyone was late today.
And we will have another discussion about this at some stage soon. And we might try and actually bring on a person with extensive experience in trans psychology and counselling to talk about it from a health professional's perspective when they're looking at it from the outside and the sorts of things they see, because they may actually see different things to trans people themselves. So it might be an interesting conversation to have with. We'll get you back, Sally, I think, for a conversation like that, if that's all right with you. And if you'd like to stay on the line, you can listen to the rest of the program with us.
Thank you so much, Sally, for being with us today.
Thanks, Sally.
Thank you. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred?
Joy 94.9.
Welcome back, Joysters. You're on Nothing Sacred, as you've just heard, on Joy 94.9. It's 10:29. And we've had a discussion so far about some issues trans. And is there anything, Kurt, that you want to wrap up about that discussion from your perspective?
Not really. I think we covered, you know, we sort of touched on a lot of different topics within the surgery topic, within the trans topic. So there's so much more you could say about everything, especially surgery. It's a really big thing for some trans people, not all trans people, but it does help to talk about it and get a lot of knowledge about it and just to discuss ideas.
And I think it's actually something that we need to recognise, and probably trans people need to recognise, is going to be the matter of great curiosity for non-trans people, and so somehow everybody has to sort of deal with it.
Yeah, well, I've heard some trans men say that people sleep with them just to see what they've got in their pants, and that hasn't happened to me. Thankfully, I've got a lovely partner.
Who's beautiful and gorgeous, and I would like to steal.
Yeah. No way.
We all love Kurt's partner. She's fabulous.
Yeah.
Hello, Candy.
Hello, Candy. Text in if you're listening. She'll be listening.
If you are interested, if you're in texting in 0427JOY949. And Kurt, also I'd like to just sort of, for people who want to get any more information, who may be want a little bit more certainty about either their gender identity or want a little bit more info about gender as a topic,
yep.
Where would you be recommending Where were your support networks, I think, actually, when you were trying to find bits and pieces?
Yeah. Well, definitely FTM Shed is a huge support.
It was a regular
We mention them
desk.
All the time.
We
yeah.
do. We get Andrew on all the time.
Yeah, so F2M Shed is for female to male transgender.
Yeah,
and the Zoe Bell Gender Centre for general
General, yeah, general gender issues on gendercentre.org.au. And there's also Transgender Victoria. And they can, you know, they have pamphlets for all sorts of problems you might run into. And there's also...
for younger people, there's Y Gender, isn't there?
Y Gender, yeah. And Sally Golden has done a new thing for transgender people's parents, which is, I don't know much about, but I'll look into that and maybe post a few things on the Facebook page.
Well, that would be a really good
idea. We'll definitely do that.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
We're going to also be talking. We are still in the midsummer.
In the midst of midsummer.
It certainly was today. I almost passed out from the heat. But the Midsummer Festival, obviously. So there's a lot of bits and pieces that are coming up for that as well.
There are. And you should have a look on the Midsummer website because there's a whole lot of stuff that's happening that is free. Particularly, there's art exhibitions. There's one on High Street in Northcote, one at number one Spring Street in the city that you can just go and have a look at and wander past without paying any money at all.
And there's one way down on Nepean Highway at the Kingston Arts Centre.
Cool.
I actually drove all the way down there to see it the other day, and I got there at 5:01, and of course it closed at 5, so I didn't see it, so I have to go back down there again on the weekend.
And there's Pride March, which is happening this weekend.
This Sunday.
On Sunday, yes. 2:00, people gathering from 12.
And Joy is having a big contingent, so if you're a Joy member, you are invited to turn up at 12:00 on the corner of Fitzroy and...
Oh, it's at the top end.
Yes.
At the city end.
Of Fitzroy Street in Alma Road, I think it is. So go there and find the Joy banner. And if you've got a Joy T-shirt, take a Joy T-shirt or a Joy badge and wear that and join in with the Joy contingent. There are many other groups, so... The Enough campaign is marching as a group, and I assume that there'll be a trans group. Kurt, are you aware of that?
Oh, I know there is FTM Shed, but I'm not sure for trans women, but there should be something.
Definitely should be.
Yeah, it's going to be a scorcher as well, so make sure you have lots of water.
Lots of suntan. And if you bring your dog, make sure that you bring a bowl and a bottle of water for the dog.
Yeah, plastic bowl. I got a really great little plastic bowl that you can flatten, and then when you need it, you push it out, and it's just a tiny little dog bowl. So it's
and cool. I know, and whoever the person was that borrowed mine at the last march last year and never gave it back to me, bring it.
Bring it or else.
Or there'll be trouble.
Yeah.
But for those people who haven't been to Pride March before, there's lots
like
of
me.
People there. Oh, very exciting.
Patrick's
it's not,
a virgin.
It's not, you know, like Mardi Gras, Sydney style. It's a bit more community style. But there is a park, Katani Guns, at the end where you can sit under a tree and recover.
And you can buy a gelato and you can sit there and eat it. And
that's true.
Oh, no, that's way too tempting for me. Way too tempting.
I'm going to buy you a gelato. And then there's a beach, of course, because St Kilda Beach is there. So take your swimmers, everybody, and go
Don't go skinny dipping like I did when I was 18 and went to Pride March.
Did you?
In daylight?
No, it was dark.
It was dark. Oh, that's all right.
Oh, damn. I was going to be sitting on the beach waiting with bated breath for that,
no,
for sure.
No, it was dark. It was just a big day.
It was mooning in the moonlight.
I was 18.
Well, when I skinny dipped, I remember some people came along and was like, oh, my gosh, look, a dugong. And it was very, very dark.
That is because people, Patrick is a white boy.
I am very, very white. I glow in the dark.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Is Nothing Sacred with Pat, James, Kurt and Steph. Joy 94.9.
You're on Nothing Is Nothing Sacred with Jim, Pat, Kurt and
Steph.
And we've got on the line Rob Moody. Hi there, Rob. It's Jim Hyde here. Now, for people that don't know, Rob Moody is the... one of the professors of public health and global health at the University of Melbourne. And Rob, you were previously in various past lives when I knew you, the director of Vic Health, and you were also the chair of the National Prevention Task Force, which concentrated quite a lot on alcohol and alcohol prevention.
We're also looking at the tobacco at the time and diet and physical activity as well, but alcohol is a big issue both from a health perspective and from a societal perspective as well.
And so for us, the big issue that's concerning Joy listeners at the moment are the issues around proposed lockouts in New South Wales and the ones that we had here in Victoria before, and whether or not they work, and what is the what is the effect of those on the unintended effects of those on other things that are of interest to people in the community, like the live music industry and people's ability to go out and have a reasonably good time without being
fun. Yeah. Well, I think you'll find that the results of the proposed change in New South Wales, because they're based on the Newcastle experience, that in fact what happens is this manages the whole issue of alcohol much more effectively. So it's more fun to go out at night rather than being afraid of what might happen because of people who are really very drunk. And certainly in Newcastle, what they've shown, and they've had a pretty minor adjustment. They close at 3 o'clock and have a lockout at 1. And remember, it doesn't affect all that many outlets. But what they found was a 35% reduction in assaults over 5 years, and that was maintained. And that was also a 35% or third reduction in admissions to emergency departments. And the fact that also the police had much less work, but they had certainly much less alcohol-related work to do, so they could concentrate on other work. There's been a pretty positive response from the sort of people in the centre of the business district.
But it didn't close the Star Hotel down, did it? Which was the famous hotel.
No, it didn't. Having been there myself, a great venue, and no, it didn't. I mean, it's and there's certainly a bit of fear mongering by those owners of very late night venues, this is something, I guess, for many years we've sort of said, well, really anything goes, and now it's time to, I think because of the community reaction, to manage this a little more effectively. So in many ways, people go out more and have more fun, but it just doesn't have to be ruined by people who get really very drunk and very aggressive and hurt other people. And that's what we've seen quite a bit. And that's it's not prohibition. It's not drastic. It's some sort of fairly modest changes to make sure everybody can enjoy themselves more.
Well, Rob, the only thing that I suppose that we're a little bit I know that I was a little bit concerned about is that I'm really happy that it's been working in Newcastle, but Sydney, of course, is a lot of a denser population, and the areas that they're targeting are notoriously violent. And also the recent incident, obviously, with Daniel Christie, is that this occurred outside of a venue after people had been drinking. And my main concern, although I appreciated the response that Barry O'Farrell gave to this situation, and obviously it is a step forward, is that I'm worried that it's not quite addressing the issue with our drinking culture as such, and it's just sort of saying we're going to put people out into the street. I have been to King's Cross, but when I lived in Sydney, I used to go to King's Cross, and also public transport around there is very minimal in terms of you've got a bus half hour. I know Barry O'Farrell has said that he's going to extend that, but how, and it's not very clear so far in all the documents that I've seen about that. Is that a concern? Is that a valid concern to have, though, with these laws?
Yeah. No, I mean, what Mr. O'Farrell's done is a start. I mean, and it's the first sort of major political response to the issue. Virtually all the other responses and have been very much on the side of the industry and not to get in the way of the industry. And this has been said, well, look, hang on, enough's enough. We need to start to shift the balance a little bit. And by virtue of earlier closing at 3 and a lockout at 1:30, what you'll find, certainly based on the Newcastle experience, is you'll get a reduction in violence and a reduction in assaults. It doesn't mean you will stop another king hit, but
obviously
it means
not.
That you're much less likely. You'll be less likely to get them than we would otherwise.
It does need to have a systemic response, doesn't it, that goes with this? You can't just do a lockout. You really need to do how do you deal with those people that get that get thrown out or get locked out and then are still drunken on the streets, and so therefore there needs to be a different sort of policing of a role going
they're
on.
They're there already, remember. I mean, the fact that you've got that many people, that you've got, you're basically reducing the number of hours where you've really got drunk people around by virtue of closing the bottle shops earlier and by virtue of closing the venue. So you're managing it better. You're actually putting less alcohol on the street, and that helps to reduce risk. There's no doubt about that. The more you sell something, the cheaper you sell it, the more you make it available, the more problems you get. So this is a sort of population-wide approach. Doesn't mean you stop, you know, major incidents, but you decrease the risk of them. That's pretty sure that'll happen. You know, your question about public transport, about actually changing the whole culture of Australian drinking, I mean, that's a big, big issue that we've been actually at for basically 15 years.
Well, that's going to require a similar response as we had in tobacco with regulations.
And road trauma. I mean, we've been very successful in changing our drinking behaviour around road trauma, drinking and driving. It's quite interesting, but very successful. But we haven't actually been good at changing our sort of high risk behaviour around drinking more generally, and that does require the fact that, you know, I don't know if you're cricket watchers, but just watch the cricket in the last several weeks, and our cricketers are
advertising all the time,
huge ambassadors for alcohol. I mean, when Mitchell Johnson got his award for the Alan Border Medal, so he's up there with Mark Nicholas, the presenter, and Alan Border, who's named after him, and Mitchell Johnson, and they're there having their beer. I mean, that's never been, I think, you never see that at the Brownlow. Just sort of, as soon as you present the award, the beer comes out. It's obviously an advertisement, and it was a ploy done by Carlton United, I expect. So this is a sort of constant reinforcing of Australia's drinking culture, and particularly we know that kids under 18 are exposed as much to the advertising as kids over 18.
So. Most definitely. We'll be talking a little bit more about this when we come back from a little break. Thank you very much, Rob. We'll be keeping you on the line and talking more about alcohol-fueled violence. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're with Steph, James, Kurt and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, it's 10:49, and we're talking all things alcohol-fueled violence and the idea of lockouts and prevention for violence, which is alcohol-fueled. We've got on the line Rob Moody. Thanks for being with us, Rob.
Pleasure.
I'm interested to ask just a little bit. We would... A little while back, Rob, you were mentioning just about that the laws have been in support of industry.
Yep.
With that. The only critique that I've had about the lockout laws is the fact that it does exclude small bars and casinos, which, well, especially casinos, which I find is a little bit along Barrow Farrell's kind of line. I mean, we've seen with all the casinos that have occurred in, and I've completely forgotten the wharf now, wherever that was. Do you think, though, that, I mean, alcohol, wherever alcohol is there is a possibility if people are of a violent nature or can be exacerbated by alcohol? So it seems a little bit like if he's sort of picking and choosing.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. We talk about the lockout that occurred in Melbourne in 2008. You may remember it.
Yeah.
It was interesting. That didn't work at all simply because well over about a fifth of the venues actually were excluded from it. So if you do have a lockout, certainly from the experience, I think in Newcastle, it could be a certain area, then you have to make sure everybody abides by it. So it's all the same. So I'm not particularly au fait with exactly who's in and who's out in Barry O'Farrell's one. What you do want to target, however, are the major venues where you've got the biggest numbers of people and, in a sense, the most alcohol being sold. They're the big issue. They're the ones you really want to get to in terms of trying to manage risk. And what this is about trying to manage risk on a fairly large scale. And that if you institute it for long enough, as it's happened in Newcastle, you do get a change in culture and everybody starts to get used to it. And it's amazing how quick venues can actually adapt.
Yeah, I had a question about the lockout in Melbourne because, you know, I was one of those people going out in Melbourne in 2008. And I guess I was curious about the impact of the lockout as compared to the impact of the earlier closing time, because I guess my experience was when people left a venue and then they tried to get in somewhere else and they couldn't, then they ended up angry. I would be guessing it would be increasing conflicts with bouncers who were saying, no, you can't come in. You then have all these drunk, angry people on the street who want to go out dancing and can't. And I guess I don't quite understand how that can decrease violence compared to just closing everything at 3 o'clock.
Oh, I see. Well, it's a sort of a gradual. I think what they use of the lockout is a sort of a gradual management, so that people actually and if enough people know about it, and it becomes an accepted part of the behaviour. Then people, when they don't leave after 1:30. If they really want to stay drinking, they do stay there till 3 o'clock. So
and smart venue owners would just put a cover charge on to offset the decrease in bar sales and let people in and dance, because if people want their view is they want to go in and dance, let them go in and dance, but not be able to buy alcohol in there.
Yeah, and it's interesting once you make a level playing field for all the venue owners, because then they can actually, they don't like it, but then they can start to see that it has some effect. It's been interesting that Barry O'Farrell's been talking about the venue owners in Manly. And how they've actually had an accord there, and they've worked together to reduce violence. Because, I mean, in the long run, you know, the violence really doesn't help anybody, and it gives the bad, you know, it gives the street and the place a bad name. I mean, just think how good the sort of lane culture is in Melbourne. But who's going to go to King Street? You know, you've got a whole lot of people that just don't want to go anywhere near that part of the world because they're too afraid of being beaten up, and that's probably from about 10 o'clock onwards, not let alone from 2 o'clock onwards. So there's certainly strong support, it seems, not only from the police obviously, what's going on in New South Wales, certainly the emergency departments, and talk to them, they really know what's going on, but also the sort of the tourism leaders, because they understand that this has really given Sydney a really bad name in terms of being a venue that can be, you know, happily enjoyed by everybody.
What would be the next step, do you believe, for Barry O'Farrell to take if we really want to clamp down on alcohol-fuelled violence beyond just the lockout laws? As we were talking about, it is a bit of a first step, but you still have some gaps that could be addressed. And do you think it comes down to our advertising and our education, especially when it comes to alcohol?
Yeah, well, certainly just before we get to that, but I mean, yeah. I think the other thing is what you can do in terms of responsible serving of alcohol is actually enforce it. you know, that actually, you know, you don't serve people who are really drunk. And that becomes the rule of the venues.
But that's something that I think there needs to be an accord with the unions and with the LTU with, because when we were having a discussion with someone else earlier, Rob, one of our colleagues who works in a bar said that if he stopped serving people because they were slightly inebriated, he'd get the sack.
Exactly. No. You pick up on my point exactly, is that, you know, that has to be enforced not only by police but by the venues themselves, so they do understand that.
And they have to take responsibility for it, and probably absolutely have some monetary responsibility for it at times.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and the point, I think the point is what we're trying to say is that if you have a license to sell alcohol, then there's responsibilities that really do go with that. I mean, it's sort of the way.
It is a license to print money, after all.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. In Victoria, we had 2 new liquor licences granted every day on average from 1986 to 2006. 2 new liquor licences granted on average every day for 20 years. Now, you know, a huge percentage of those are the safe, you know, laneway, small venues, well-managed, no problems, restaurants, small bars. But some of these bigger ones that the, you know, that have really big numbers, they sell really, you know, they say really sell lots of grog. They're really trying to encourage huge numbers and huge profits, or, you know, huge turnover. Then they're the ones that really cause the problem. So, you know, managing the licences is actually really quite important, and that requires the sort of responsible serving of alcohol. Requires, you know, opening times we don't need. You don't need the bottle shops open 24/7. I mean,
no,
we don't need that.
Exactly.
And that And that is dangerous. So,
well, thanks, Rob, for participating in this discussion. I think we've actually covered quite a lot of ground tonight.
We're just running a little bit short on time.
We're running right up to the end of our program at the moment.
Good on you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. So, Joyce, as you're on Joy 94.9 on Is Nothing Sacred, and we're about to wrap up for the night before the bears come on within the woods. And thanks, Kurt. Thanks, Steph. Guys. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you. If anyone has anything that you'd like us to talk about, please go on our Facebook, facebook.com/isnothingsacred on Joy 94.9. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.
See you at Pride March.
Thanks, Robert, on the front desk.
Robert, on the front desk.
Everybody at Pride March, please.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.